Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller, and today we're talking prairies, how to use native prairie plants in your landscape. Neil Diebold, our guest, prairie ecologist, landscape designer, and president of Prairie Nursery in Westfield, Wisconsin. He's an internationally recognized expert in ecological natural landscape design. He's been with us a number of times, and I'm really pleased to have him back today as we move into this fall season. There's kind of a fall planting season for native prairie plants, and certainly talk with him about that and take your questions. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. Neil, welcome back.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
Glad to have you back. And, you know, we're still in August, but...
At least chronologically.
Yeah, chronologically. But, you know, fall's a pretty good time to be doing some prairie planting, isn't it?
It can be a very good time if your site is properly prepared. And one of the reasons why fall planting, whether it's plants or seeds, and the techniques are different for both, is good, particularly for seeds. Many of the prairie flowers have some dormancies built into their seeds. So some of them, when planted in the spring, won't necessarily come up that spring.
Yeah.
But a lot of them will germinate better if planted in the fall, which gives them what is called a cold damp treatment or a quote-unquote stratification treatment.
Yeah, sure.
So that breaks the dormancy in the seed, so then they will germinate at a higher rate the following spring. They won't come up in the fall. Very few. A couple might. But most will come up the next spring at higher rates than had they been planted in the spring of the previous year.
So it's a really good time to do it then.
It really is. Again, assuming that your site is properly prepared, you've got all the weeds out, and the soil is ready to go, you don't have any lingering problems there.
Have you ever had a situation where you got all the weeds out?
Well, let me think now. The only situation where I've gotten all the weeds out is where we killed everything off and we brought in a cover, 3 to 4 inches of sand, or actually loamy sand, from a sand pit. was deposited by the glaciers, you know, 12, 13,000 years ago, and hasn't seen the light of day for that long, and so there's no weed seeds in it. That is one technique you can use on small areas. That gets kind of expensive, putting 3 inches of sand over an acre. I mean, you're talking a lot of dump trucks. But that is the only way I've ever achieved a quote-unquote weed-free or essentially weed-free environment.
But you can do a pretty good job without that much sand. And
yes, you can kill everything by a variety of means. You can use Roundup to kill everything off. You can till the soil repeatedly every 3 to 4 weeks for a year or two. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you have to spend that long with herbicides too. So if you have a lot of perennial weeds, you might need 2 full years to get the site ready. Sometimes it only takes one. Hey, if you've got a food garden that you're not using anymore, although I don't know if they did that this year. Everybody planted, you know, more food this year.
Yeah, there's a lot more.
But if you have an area that's been, quote-unquote, weed-free for a long time, you can go right in and seed that or put in transplants there as well.
And you don't necessarily have to have a huge – I mean, we used to have prairie covering the whole Midwest and all the way down from Wisconsin – or well, Canada, actually, all the way down to Texas.
Millions of acres. Yes, right.
But now, obviously a lot smaller. We've lost a lot.
Yeah. It depends on what kind of situation you have, what kind of look you want. For a smaller area, a lot of people will use transplants and create a garden. Mm-hmm. Which is a little more formal. You can put the plants exactly where you want and create some really nice color combinations, textural combinations, etc. With seeds, it's generally plant them all and let God sort them out type of situation. Yeah. And now you can, you know, broadcast a drift of this species of seed here and a drift of this species here. But you generally want to have good coverage of a wide variety of species so you fill all the ecological niches in the prairie. And the ecological niches are different types of root systems, different leaf structures, different heights, etc. So you make sure that you completely encompass that soil and the growing environment, which then will help keep out weeds.
Have you been really busy, by the way? Good business, even in the tough economic times?
Well, you know, we're affected like everybody else. Our spring was a little slower than we would have liked, but fall is picking up. It's looking pretty good. So we're doing very well in August, but you never know from month to month. You know, it's crazy. You know, you have a great April, and then May's not very good, and then June's great. It's like, I don't know. We can't predict.
Well, Karen in Portage has a question or comment for you. Karen, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. First, a little background. I have a farm which is sandy loam to Sahara Desert, lots of shade. I have a gardening method which I call bedlam. If you blossom, I like you. I have native plants. I have perennials. I avoid annuals because it's just too much. And I realized that in July, my main flower bed is a lovely shade of green. And I looked at a neighbor who has a little piece of prairie 2 weeks ago or less. It was gorgeous. It was wild sunflowers and bergamot and coneflowers and everything else. And I went by yesterday, and there's some little purple thing that is left. Is there anything that blooms prolifically in July and August?
In the shade.
Yeah, pretty much shade. There's, you know, there's sun that gets through.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what you're describing here is the basic ecology of the two different woodland woodland versus prairie systems, ecosystems. Mm-hmm. And most, not all, but most of your woodland plants bloom in the spring. A lot of them will bloom before the tree leaves come out when they have plenty of light.
Mm-hmm.
And once the tree leaves have come out, they're shading the ground more. The temperatures get hotter. And these are typically referred to as your spring ephemerals, which bloom April, May, June. And then a lot of them are dormant by the end of July.
Yeah.
For instance, like your May apples are pretty much dormant. Trilliums are pretty close to dormant. But in the woodland, there are species that do bloom in the summer and many that bloom in the fall. So there are asters that are just starting to bloom now, some very nice asters, particularly one. The white woodland aster is just starting to bloom, and the big leaf aster, which both of these will grow in very sandy soils because I live 15 miles east of you, and I have wonderful sandy soil too. Under pines, they'll grow under oaks. They're pretty darn adaptable. You also have some heucheras, the alum roots. There's American alum root, Heuchera americana, and my favorite, the maple-leaved alum root, Heuchera villosa, variety atropurpurea. Why is it variety atropurpurea? It has beautiful purple-tinged leaves, surprisingly large white flowers. It's blooming its head off right now. You don't think of a lot of plants in the woodland blooming in August, but this is a real standout.
Uh-huh.
So you also have some very good goldenrods for later in the season.
All right.
And finally, fire pink, silenes. This is also another plant that blooms in summer in the woodland situation.
All right. There you have it. Thank you, Karen, for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to Jane in Fredonia. Hi, Jane.
Hi. Hi. We're spreading out some pine trees into an alfalfa field, and we don't necessarily want this to be a lawn area. Would you have any suggestions for us?
Okay, when you say you're putting pines into a field, is it alfalfa is there now, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, and you want to have what kind of growing situation? You want to have like a low-maintenance turf, like a low-growing grass or something like that?
A no-mow or something?
Yeah, I've heard something about no-mow, or you mow it like four times a year or something.
Ooh, that's a lot.
Yeah, you don't have to mow it that much.
Yeah, what you might want to look at, Karen, is our no-mow lawn mix, which is a combination of six different fine fescues, which are adapted to well-drained soils. They do not grow on really heavy clay or damp soils.
But this is pretty heavy clay.
Pretty heavy clay. Do you have at least 4 inches of good black topsoil over that clay?
No, it's pretty much clay.
Pretty much clay. That's going to be a tough one then, because the no-mow really likes a good drainage and a fairly loose soil. Heavy clay is not the best situation, especially during drought. It needs to get its roots down into the soil. It doesn't penetrate the clay very well, so when you get a hot, dry summer, you might have some plants that will go dormant and it won't look as good. So on clay for a low growing, you know, one thing you might want to try is Dutch white clover. It's not something that we offer. It's not one of your native plants, but it does very well on clay soils and it will give you a low growing cover, and it's great for bees if you like bees.
Yeah. There you have it.
All right. Thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we'll turn to Robert next in Prairie du Chien. Hi, Robert.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
I have a very steep hill on my yard that I got tired of mowing, so I tried to do a native prairie restoration type project. Last fall, I used Roundup and burned the area and planted a mix of wildflowers and prairie grasses. And the wildflowers are doing great, but I don't see any evidence that any of the grasses germinated or anything.
Do you know what species of grasses you used and also what your soil type is?
I would say the soil type is loamy or sandy loam.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the main... grass types were buffalo grass and little bluestem.
Okay, and you're located where?
Prairie du Chien.
Prairie du Chien, okay. Little bluestem does well on well-drained soils. If you have loam or sandy loam, it should be fine. But at this point, it's probably only about 3 to 4 inches tall. Buffalo grass is a little trickier. This is a species not native to Wisconsin. It grows out west in eastern Colorado, western Kansas, Oklahoma Panhandle, northern Texas, etc. And it's pretty sensitive to competition from other species. We tested it. In fact, before we came out with our no-mow lawn 15 years ago, we tested buffalo grass for a number of years and found that it just didn't work very well.
It just
well.
Didn't work.
Not in our climate. It just in our soils. It just is not a good choice. So I doubt you're going to see a lot of buffalo grass. You might get some, but it would be unlikely. The little bluestem is probably just very small yet. And one other thing is when you seed in the fall, at least native prairie flowers and grasses, the flowers typically indicate higher germination when seeded in the fall, as we talked about earlier, because you break dormancy in those seeds. But the warm season grasses, almost across the board, show significantly lower germination than compared to spring seeding. For whatever reason, if there's, I don't know if anybody really knows, there seems to be a loss of the seed in the soil or something happens to it. So fall prairie seedings, you get better germination of the flowers the next spring, but poor germination of the warm season grasses. With spring seedings, you'll get much better germination of the warm season grasses and good germination of many of the flowers, but some of the ones that require that cold, damp treatment over winter will sit in the soil and come up the following spring. And a few might struggle and not do very well at all with spring seedings, but most of them will come through.
Mm-hmm. So can I overseed with some other grasses next spring then?
Actually, if you're going to overseed, now here's the conundrum. When you're overseeding into an existing planting where you're not going to work up the ground, the best time to do that is the fall. And the reason for that is when you scatter seed over an area without working the ground up, the seed has to find its way down into the soil so it has some seed-to-soil contact to germinate successfully. If you do that in the fall, you have the frost-heaving action of the soil that opens the soil up and closes it as the soil freezes and thaws. That then places the seed just about where it needs to be. And we've used this method very, very successfully. However, if you do that in the spring, you don't have any frost heave to position the seed in the soil. It just sits on the surface. Yes, you'll get some germination depending on the species, but it's much less reliable and much less efficient. So really, if you're going to overseed, even with the grasses, go out in the fall and put a little extra grass seed on.
All right. There you have it. Thank you very much for calling. Neil Diebel, our guest, president of Prairie Nursery of Westfield, Wisconsin, as we talk about using native prairie plants in our Wisconsin landscape. And lots of callers online. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Jenny in Green Bay up next. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Love your shows.
Thank you.
My parents we built a house when I was like 10 years ago, and it's on top of a very tall hill. Well, you can see the water tower. It's eye level with us for the town. That's how tall it is. And my dad, in his infinite wisdom, used a lot of sand, like evening out the yard. Basically, it was like rough old pasture / woodland, and then they dumped a lot of sand in there. There's a lot of clay, they dumped in a lot of black dirt. So it's kind of a soily hodgepodge, but there's everything they plant there, like, does horribly. I mean, my dad's got these couple, like, fruit trees. He had cherry trees that died, and then he got the bright idea that he was going to plant some cedar trees for kind of like a fancy type cover thing, and they didn't make it. So I was wondering if you had any suggestions for bushy type creatures to live in my parents' yard.
Okay, I have a couple more questions for you. The base soil is clay, correct?
Somewhere in there, yes.
Okay, and how much sand, black dirt, etc. was placed on top of that clay?
The area of yard that we're talking about,
yes,
at least, I don't know, a couple dump trucks.
Okay, how did it translate into inches of soil? 1 inch, 3 inch, 6 inch, 12 inch? Do you have any idea?
I'm an archaeologist. I'll give you centimeters.
Okay, that's fine.
at least 15 to 16 centimeters of blacktop, like, not blacktop, black dirt. And then underneath that, there's any varying amount of sand, and then there's the clay.
So you put 6 inches of black dirt over a varying amount of sand over the clay.
Yeah.
Okay, what you now have is a schizophrenic soil. It no longer knows what it is. Oh, I'm clay. No, I'm sand. No, I'm organic matter. Oh, my God, what do I do? That can create problems for selecting plants. Not always, but in some cases it will. For instance, fruit trees, most fruit trees like a well-drained soil. Mm-hmm. Like if you're going to plant apple trees, peach trees, they like a sandy loam, a loam. But heavy clay, when they get the roots down there, generally speaking, it's not recommended. That's why you see a lot of orchards in Door County where they have very thin, well-drained soils. But as far as certain species of trees, some can tolerate a wide variety of soil conditions, and some are fairly narrow in their tolerances. And when they encounter variations in the soil, they might have some problems adapting to it. Now, that might be your problem. There could be a lot of different factors that come into play. But I would study that soil, get out your archaeology tools, and dig into there and really get an idea of what the soil layers are, so then you can do some research and pick the appropriate trees that are going to be matched to those soil conditions.
Yeah. Are there prairie plants that work in that kind of situation?
There are some generalists. Okay, mm-hmm. Things like yellow coneflower, purple coneflower, bergamot, and many other species, oxeye sunflower. These will grow in a wide variety of soils, from a fairly dry sand to fairly heavy clay and soils with a lot of organic matter. So you have plants that have very wide tolerances of habitat and soil conditions, and then you have some that are fairly narrow, the specialists that require either like a really dry sand or just the right amount of organic matter with the right moisture at a certain level, and so on and so forth. So that's very important when you select your plants. If you've got a difficult soil situation, pick the generalists, the guys that can grow almost anywhere.
All right. Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. On to John in Madison. John, hi to you.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I have a wooded lot that we've slowly been clearing out the buckthorn and honeysuckle and things like that. So we've got some nice, open, sunny areas now. The last couple of years, it's been taken over by general broadleaf weeds and some wildflowers. But this summer, we've had an unbelievable poison ivy infestation, and it's basically every area that we've cleared out, it's crept in. We'd like to overseed it with stuff to try to compete with that. Do you have any suggestions? We have to kill all the broadleaf first and then remove it, root it all, or will the broadleaf herbicides kill it so that we can seed over it?
Well, you need to think like an attorney. Possession is 9/10 of the law. And whatever's growing there is going to tend to stay there. So first thing is you cannot just go out and throw seed over there. You might get a little bit here and there. But the plants that are presently colonizing that area are going to tend to hang on to it and discourage the germination and growth of what you seed. So generally speaking, I have a woodland that 15-acre buckthorn farm, which I've whittled down to about 5 now over the last many, many years. And what I have found is that when you're dealing with these problem plants, buckthorn, honeysuckle, poison ivy, you need to get complete control of them. And that doesn't just include killing the existing plants, but also dealing with the seeds that are in the soil. And possibly what might have happened is after you removed the buckthorn, you opened up the soil to sunlight, and there might have been dormant seeds of the poison ivy and various other plants that said, oh boy, sunshine, because the buckthorn casts such a dense shade, not much will grow under it, except more buckthorn. So you probably opened it up, and then other plants, and garlic mustard will do this. You cut out the buckthorn, and voila, all of a sudden, garlic mustard everywhere. Oh, isn't that great? You traded one for the other. So typically, I do not use broadleafs in my woodlands, because broadleaves, and there's only certain species certain formulations like dicamba, that if you spray that in a woodland, it will translocate down into the roots of the trees and can kill them. So the only herbicide I will use in my woodlands is Roundup. And there are some people that debate, okay, is it good or is it bad? I mean, hey, you know, anything you use is going to have an impact. But I would steer clear of the broadleaves just to make sure you don't harm any of your broadleaf herbicides, to make sure you don't harm any of your trees. Although there are herbicides that do not translocate and can be used on those conditions, I just prefer to err on the safe side. So I would kill everything. On a large area, I use Roundup. On smaller areas, you can smother it. If you have a very small area and you can put down cardboard and leave it there for a year or two, the problem with this is it does not kill the seeds in the soil. It only kills the existing growing plants. If you want to kill the seeds, then repeated application of Roundup will not only kill the existing plants, but the seeds that germinate over time will also be killed until you have a, not weed-free, Larry, but
no.
but a greatly reduced weedy area. In my woodland, I will sometimes treat it for 3 to 4 years before I even plant anything, just to make sure I've got rid of all the bad guys. Garlic mustard seed can remain dormant for 7 years in the soil, so you got some real bad guys out there.
Thanks very much for calling. Good luck. Appreciate it. Neil Diebel, our guest today, prairie ecologist, president of Prairie Nursery in Westfield, Wisconsin. Our guest here on Garden Talk, Dave Potratz, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On this edition of Garden Talk, we're talking about how to use native prairie plants in your landscape. Neil Diebel, our guest today from Prairie Nursery, really pleased to have him back. And Rob in Toma is up with a question. Rob, hello to you.
Hi. I have a two-year-old prairie planting right now. And originally the plan, as I understood it, was to burn it next year. But my consultant, Jennifer Baker, actually came out this spring, and since the clover is so heavy, she advises that it gets mowed next spring as well. And there's a lot of, when it gets mowed, a lot of stuff collects on the field, and to get it up off the field, the farmer who does it for me can do it, but he has to use a flail, and it really seems to tear everything up. So I'm wondering, what's the lesser of the two evils, to let the cut stuff lay or to flail it up?
Generally, we like to use a flail mower, and if you mow it at the correct height, it chops everything up so that it's more loose than if you use like a rotary mower. Oftentimes with a rotary mower, if you have a lot of vegetative material, it'll kind of stick to the housing, and then you get these big piles of vegetation that smother the good guys, especially in the early stages when they're little seedlings. So the flail mower, we've not had a lot of problems with that when it's set at the proper height, and it just chops everything up really, really well, and then it just all falls down onto the area, but it quickly dries out and typically does not present a problem. Are you having some kind of problem as far as the buildup with the flail mower?
Well, it left you know, streaks of this cut material, and the farmer used some kind of, I mean, it wasn't a flail mower, I don't think, but to collect it off the field, he used something that kind of stirred it all up.
Oh, okay.
And when it was like, well, I guess it was chain. No, it wasn't. It was...
He windrowed it.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, and it has these little circular wire-like things, right?
Yep, that's it.
Okay. How large an area are you working with?
There are two patches, like one's 5 and 1 7 acres, something like that.
Okay, let me tell you a real simple method you can use. Do you have a local dairy farmer that chops hay? Okay.
Sure.
Instead of mowing it, have him come in with the chopper wagon. And as he mows it, it'll just blow it right back in that wagon and take it off your field.
Because I would think if there's a lot of clover that they might actually have some use for it.
Might very well, yes. Now, is this white clover, red clover, or sweet clover? how tall is it?
It's purple.
Okay, so it's red clover. Okay, and it gets about 18 inches tall, 24 inches tall.
Well, we didn't let it get that tall.
Okay, got it. Yep, okay. Yeah, if you just bring in the chopper wagon, and maybe he'll do it for free if it's good forage.
Okay.
Okay, and because you have a large enough acreage, he can maneuver that, the tractor and the chopper wagon, in there effectively. So give that a shot and see if that doesn't work for you.
All right. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Jean, who is on the road right now, let's go to her. Hi, Jean. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a piece of property south of Eau Claire, so it's really sandy soil. And we are currently trying to kill off some, I guess you would call it like crabgrass mix, over a drain field. And I'm doing it organically because we have a small organic vegetable area that's too close that I don't want to use chemicals. I want to put in some native prairie plants, and I was wondering what might work there.
Well, I'll tell you, the best thing you can do is to get one of our catalogs or go to our website, because we list, in our catalog, we list the plants by their soil types. So we have the clay busters, plants for clay, plants for sand that will grow on dry, sandy soils, and we have a plant selection guide that lists all the species we offer by the soil type, by the moisture conditions, dry, medium, moist, height, color, bloom time, etc. You can also find this information on our website if you go there, too. So that's probably your best way to get started, and you can look and see which plants you like, look at the pictures, learn a little bit more about them, and then pick the plants. Or if you want, you can just use one of our pre-designed seed mixes or plant gardens, which have already been figured out for you, the seeding rates, the plant spacing, plant arrangements, etc. So those are a lot of choices there for you.
Okay, now will I have to look at anything different because it is a drain field, or is that, would it just be with, like what's in the surrounding area?
Well, according to University Extension, they actually have a publication on planting prairie on drain fields. And they list, and I don't have the name of that publication here, but it's put out, I believe, by the UW Extension.
Yes, it is. You could go to the Learning Store at UW Extension and University of Wisconsin Extension Learning Store, and that you'll be able to find the publication in there.
And it has a lot of good information. And apparently, according to the people I've spoken to, I'm not an expert at exhuming septic systems, but I have spoken to people who do. Isn't that a lovely job? The people I've spoken to say they've never seen herbaceous plants clogging the pipes. It's woody plants, trees and shrubs, that cause the problems. But supposedly, according to my sources, herbaceous plants do not clog the pipes. And we planted a prairie on our drain field at our office 27 years ago, and it's cooking right along, no problem. So far, so good.
All right, wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And your website address is prairienursery.com, right?
Correct.
And to get a, they could probably order a catalog if they want right off the website.
They can do right off the website, or they can call our office, too.
What's your number?
1-800-476-9453. That's 1-800-GROW-WILD. But when you put in Grow Wild, don't hit the zero. You'll get some sex line or something. So,
so it's 476-9453 might be the better approach.
1-800-476-9453. Call now.
Okay. Oh, man. Let's go to Quentin and Madison next. Hi, Quentin. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I joined in late, so you may have already answered this question. But I'm wondering if I can do the no-mow fescue lawn in patches by, you know, tarping off my current lawn.
How large an area would you be doing in each little patch?
We could probably do as much as maybe 200 square feet. We have about that much. I mean, we can get as much tarp as we need, I suppose.
10 by 20 or so?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the existing lawn?
It's whatever it was when we moved in. It's just grass.
Okay, it could be bluegrass or...
Probably a combination of fescues and bluegrass.
Yeah, and maybe some perennial rye or something like that. Okay, you can do that. You certainly can. The only issue you're going to have to deal with is some of your long grasses, especially bluegrass, creep by underground runners, by stolons. And so they will slowly creep into the adjacent nomo that you seed. So you want to leave a little buffer strip of about, 6 inches. Okay.
Okay.
So between the two?
So when I move the tarp over, I will cover back some of the area that I just tarped.
Exactly. And
Okay. Typically
you can kill a lawn. It's going to be a little bit late now, but usually 2, maybe 3 months of covering will kill most lawns. However, if you have some perennial weeds in there, some of them take longer to kill. So you may not get those killed off, and some are really tough, like Canada thistle, which has roots 2 feet deep.
I may actually want to go with the Roundup.
Either method will work for you as long as you don't have any real problem weeds in there. But the smothering is a great option. What I typically do is start it in late spring, early summer, kill everything off all during the growing season, and then seed my nomo in September. And September is the time to plant nomo because it will come up beautifully in the fall, and you get those nice gentle fall rains, nice cool temperatures, very low stress environment for it to come up, and most of your weed seeds germinate in spring. There's a few that germinate in fall, but the ratio of weeds that germinate in the fall, the amount of weeds, number of species, is so much less than spring. You get a beautiful lawn, and this applies whether you're planting our no-mo mix or a typical cool season lawn. So September is the time to plant.
Great. And actually, I had a suggestion for the person who was trying to plant pine trees in their alfalfa field.
Yeah.
There are certain types of firs that just drop a wonderful, nice, soft needle bed. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
That was just such a suggestion. So, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And, boy, we have more callers online. Let's go to John in Minocqua. John, hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Good. Question. I'd like to try and get a lawn. I wouldn't say going. I have an existing lawn. You ask what type of soil. I have, like, no soil. It's like sand. I would say
Minocqua.
It's gravel.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, it's gravel. Pine trees, a few oak trees. We lost a few trees in a tornado last year. So we have a little bit more sun than we used to have and have moved some ground around. And just wondering what ideas you'd have for me.
Okay, let me ask you a couple questions. First of all, you have sand and gravel mixed or just plain gravel?
I'd say more just plain gravel.
So it's super dry?
Yeah.
Okay, And what percentage tree cover do you have? 50%, 70%?
I would say 50%. I would say the whole area would at least have a little bit of sun at some point during the day.
Okay, so you get some...
as the sun goes over.
So you get some dappled light in there.
Yes.
Okay, do you have any idea what's under that gravel as far as soil? Is it gravel all the way down?
Oh, it's like gravel all the way down.
All the way down. Do you have any soil mixed in that gravel, or is it just like rock?
Well, I wouldn't say rock, but it's put it this way, we can drive on it. You know, we just drive on it like it's a little path, you know, in some areas. I mean, if you take your shovel to dig down in it, you have to push hard to get the shovel in.
Okay, and how big are the gravels? Are they 1 inch, half an inch, little bitty pieces?
It's small.
Okay, so it's like gravel and sand mixed together?
Yeah,
Okay.
And there is some existing, you know, grass in some parts of it, and just wanted to try and get it so it doesn't look like a parking lot.
Okay, have you checked the pH in your soil?
I would assume it's acidic because a lot of pine needles.
Yes, I would assume so, too. If you can, make sure and test that pH.
Okay.
Because when you have, especially up north where you have often granite-derived soils,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's the case in yours.
And I would say granite would be the area here. Yeah.
Okay. Those tend to be very acid, and then you add on the effect of the pine trees. And oak leaves also are fairly acidic.
Okay.
You can sometimes find highly acidic soils that you might have to lime before you plant anything or seed anything.
Okay.
Okay, so I would definitely check the pH first. Now, the amazing thing about this Nomo turf mix that we offer is that it will grow in very acidic soils. The fescues are very good, down to about a pH of 5, 5.5. However, if you're below 5.5, we would recommend that you add some lime to that according to the recommendations as per your soil test.
Okay.
To get that up into a little, what they call, sweeter level of soil, just to make sure that the nutrients are available. What liming does is makes nutrients like phosphorus and other nutrients more available so the plants can survive. Mm-hmm. But this grass will grow on exceedingly dry soils, and your advantage is that you have the shade, which will reduce the amount of heat and sun stress on those grasses.
Sure.
So, and the Nomo actually does beautifully in dappled shade.
Now, would you do this in the fall after we've raked the pine needles up?
Yes. In fact, if you have a heavy pine needle cover, you want to rake all those off and get down to the mineral soil.
Right.
Okay, because if you just scatter the seed on the needles, it's going to dry out and you won't get very good germination.
Great.
I would also strongly recommend that after you put your seed down, put at least an inch of clean, weed-free straw over it.
Okay.
And that will help hold in moisture and encourage germination and growth.
Thank you.
All right.
Good luck.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. And on to Tom, who's also on the road. Tom, hi.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me there?
Yes.
Okay. This might have to do with site prep. I missed the beginning of your show here, but I'll make it quick. I got two spots that I want to do with prairie grass. They're kind of like buffer strips, couple hundred foot long, maybe 20 foot wide, in an old alfalfa field. And this spring, in early spring, I killed everything off when it started growing the best I could with Roundup. I got to admit, I probably didn't get it all. I tilled it up lightly a couple times. Everything dried. I raked all the dry stuff off. I spread out in one strip. It was called prairie drop seed, supposed to be a little blue stem, and some other stuff in it. And then the other one was Indian grass. I spread it out, and I had plenty of seed. It was plenty for this what I had, and then I lightly raked it all in. I'm pretty disappointed with how it's going. There's some light grass in there, but it's been overcome with this funny leafy weed that I've started picking. But there's grass there, but my question is I can't tell if it's what I want. Do I wait till spring? And is it too early to say if it's working?
Probably too early to say if it's working, but let me ask you a couple of questions and give you a couple of tips here. First of all, what was your seeding date for these two strips? Do you know what date?
I would say mid-May, maybe late May.
Mid to late May. Okay, and you're located where?
It's in northeast Iowa. It's actually called the Sand Cove region of northeast Iowa.
Of northeast Iowa, okay.
Yep.
And your soil type that you planted on?
Well, it's a sandy region, but I sit a little higher than where all the sand deposits are. It's pretty well drained, but it is, at the same time, it's good soil, but I call it well drained.
Okay, but it's not clay or anything like that, correct?
Not. There is some in the area but it's such a variety there is some.
Okay. Let me give you a couple ideas here for how you can possibly evaluate the success of your planting.
That's what I want to know.
Little blue stem in the fall turns an orangish-red color.
Okay.
Right now, if your seedlings germinated in June, early July, they're probably 2 to 3 inches tall. depending upon your rainfall, soil type, et cetera.
That's okay. So when I look in there, I do see some nice small grass, and it looks a lot thinner than any normal grass.
Okay, that's probably it. Anything small is good. Anything big is bad first year.
But I got to look through the weeds to see it.
Yes, that's exactly normal. That's totally normal. Remember, it's going to take 3 to 4 years for most of these prairie grasses to mature and for prairie drop seed.
I realize that.
Prairie drop seed takes 5 years or longer from seed. So also, the thing about little bluestem is if you go down and feel the leaves, they kind of look like fans. They kind of stick out at kind of an angle. They don't grow straight up, and they will be flat. Now, there's a couple weeds that also will grow flat, but they won't be as small as that right now. Okay, and then wait until the fall and see if you see little crimson or kind of orangish little seedlings all across the area where you put the little bluestem. Then you'll know what your density is. The prairie drop seed is kind of tricky. Generally, we like to plant that either in the fall or in early spring. If you plant it after about May 15th, oftentimes it doesn't germinate well. The seed does not seem to overwinter very well, does not seem to have a long lifespan in the soil, so oftentimes you don't get secondary germination in the following spring. So when you're planting prairie drop seed, you want to plant it either in the fall with fresh seed or early spring, April, early May. Indian grass, totally reliable. It's going to be a little bit harder to tell you how to tell that one. It's going to turn kind of a yellow gold in the fall, but a lot of grasses do.
Yeah.
So that one's going to be a little harder. But the little bluestem will be a kind of a reddish crimson color after the first hard frost, probably sometime by mid to late October.
All right.
Okay,
good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And more callers. Kathy in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure.
For the program, it's very appropriate for us. Prairie Nursery helped establish prairie for us about quite some time ago, and it came time to burn it, and my husband went through all the rules and regulations and had a team out there. Unfortunately, we have a neighbor who doesn't understand how to treat a prairie and came out and was very, very upset and to the point that we shut down the operation. Now we have a prairie that has been lying idle for some time, and we don't know what to do about it, given that the neighbors are, he was near violence, let's put it this way.
Because of the smoke or what?
Well, he thought we were going to burn everybody else's yard down and the houses. Okay. And, of course, we had a team. We had water. We had people who had done this before and had a lot of experience with it. So we've got a project that doesn't seem to be able to move forward, and we're afraid of the condition of the prairie now that it's been lying idle.
Okay, you have two choices. Okay. One is to have a police escort during your burn to protect you from this totally irrational, ignorant neighbor.
Yep.
The other choice is to substitute mowing and raking for burning.
Okay.
It's not nearly as much fun, but your neighbor will, if your neighbor gets agitated at you mowing it, then you really have a problem. But what you can do, and let's just look real briefly at why burning is so effective on prairies, especially spring burning, is because most of the weed problems that we have in our prairies are cool season grasses and cool season weeds. Things like quack grass, bluegrass is a weed in the prairie. Fescue, like Arnomo, if you planted a fescue in there, that would be a weed because it's going to compete with the prairie plants. Brome grass, the clovers, you have a lot of cool season non-native plants and grasses that are weeds. So they get a head start on the prairie plants, most of which are warm season, and come up later, usually late April, early May. So a lot of these cool season plants come up in early April, get a whole month head start, and consolidate the soil and growing environment and get a jump on the prairie plants. So what we do is we wait until, usually in central southern Wisconsin, we wait till late April. Even early May sometimes, like this year, we had a cool spring. Burn at that time after the cool season weeds and grasses have come up. Maybe they're about 6-7 inches tall. We burn them. It sets them back, and it turns the soil black, so the soil warms up, so that the prairie plants then can grow at a faster rate because they like warm soil conditions. Well, you can mimic this effect by, instead of burning in late April, early May, just mow everything right to the ground as close as you can. And if you can rake it off, that's great. In fact, I did a study when I managed the Arboretum at UW-Green Bay comparing these treatments and found that the mowing and raking was about 2/3 as effective as burning as far as discouraging cool season non-native grasses and encouraging the prairie plants. And by mid-July, you couldn't tell the difference visually between a burned prairie and a mowed and raked prairie. Now, the only area where this does not work very well is if you have creepy, crawly, cool season weeds like white clover, because mowing won't get it because it stays so low. So there are some weeds that are hard to control using this method. So, but for your typical cool season invasive grasses like quackgrass, broom grass, etc., this is a very effective choice for
Thank you so much.
Now, there's one other thing you can do. Was it the height of the flames that bothered your neighbor, or just the fact that there was a fire near his house?
Well, it wasn't even near his house. I really think at the heart of the problem is the fact that our prairie, it goes up to a hill and down to his place, and we have a higher place than he does. I think that's what his problem is. But I don't anticipate that he's changed his behavior any, and he doesn't understand that this has to be taken care of.
We need to send him to the re-education camp, prairie re-education camp. That's all I can tell you, comrade. You know, there's another choice for people who want to burn a prairie but are a little intimidated by it, because the flames can get pretty high depending upon the nature of the grasses. Very simple method to reduce the flame height is just before you mow the prairie, just before you burn the prairie, mow it all down. Instead of having all the grasses sticking up where the flames can creep up, you know, you can get nice. I mean, this is fun. You know, 25, 30-foot flames, this is great. But for not everybody, it's not for everybody. But if you want to burn your prairie and not have those big flames, just mow everything down so it's laying on the ground, and then it will burn very low and more controllably.
All right. There you have it. Thank you for calling. I appreciate your call. Neil Diebel, our guest today, prairie ecologist, president of Prairie Nursery in Westfield, Wisconsin, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Wisconsin Public Radio wants to hear from you. I'm Joy Cardine, inviting you to join WPR's new online community. Connect with other public radio listeners and take part in discussions before, during, and even after the show. Go to WPR.org to learn more.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Ganchert Nursery and Landscapes of Madison, designing and installing landscapes that include custom plantings, decks, patios, fencing, pergolas, and more since 1953. Information available at ganchert.com.
If you have a question about how to use native prairie plants in your landscape, I hope you will join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, and you can email us at talk@wpr.org. A couple open lines. We'll get you on fairly fast. Let's go to Randy in Pottsville, Iowa. Hi, Postville, Iowa. Hi, Randy.
Hi. We're going to be constructing a pond, a farm pond this fall. It'll be after the corn has been harvested. And I was kind of wondering what would be the best way to get something started there, if that would be too late to plant anything this fall, or what I should do.
Okay, a couple questions. When you construct this pond, I assume you're going to have some slopes. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, how steep are those slopes going to be, Randy? Do you know?
Well, the dike is going to be like a 3-to-1 slope. And the rest of it will be fairly gradual.
Okay. You're probably going to want to get something on there fairly soon to prevent erosion.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And your soil is probably good Iowa loam, clay loam. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I know that area fairly well. So, okay. So you don't want to leave that naked all winter, because it's going to wash on you. Here's what you can do. Immediately after you're done with construction, you can plant your prairie seed and then put an erosion blanket over those 3-to-1 slopes.
Uh-huh.
Okay, on areas that are not so steep, where you don't expect the potential for significant erosion, you can just put a cover of chopped, blown, clean straw, like winter wheat straw.
Sure.
Okay, only on areas that are pretty level. Okay, anywhere where you think you're going to have erosion, you're going to want to put that blanket on there. Another thing you can do is you can put in oats as a nurse crop and put that on at about 128 pounds per acre, 4 bushels per acre. And hopefully it's going to be late before you get in there, but you might get a little germination on that oats.
Yeah.
And that will help hold the soil a little bit. But anywhere where you have that erosion blanket properly installed, you should be good to go. And you want a light-duty blanket, not a heavy blanket, because if you put a heavy blanket on, some of the flower seedlings have a hard time coming up through that. So you really want a light straw blanket or a light Excelsior blanket of the little wood shavings that they put in the blanket. Those work very well. We've used them effectively for many, many years.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. On to Don in Oconto next. Hi, Don.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I killed off a chunk of my backyard.
Okay.
About a half an acre. All I have is two corn stalks and some milkweed still growing.
Okay.
And it was in wildflowers last year, a northeastern mix. But the only, well, actually, I planted this like 3 years ago, and it just whittled down to the only thing that lived was the Sweet Williams.
Yep, yep.
So should I plant the Sweet Williams in the fall or in the spring?
Well, let's look at your options here. Okay, these, you know, regional mixes, Northeast mix, Midwest mix, these typically are composed of a lot of non-native flowers.
Right.
A few native flowers sometimes, and usually no grass. Were there any grasses in it?
Not much.
Okay. And what you'll find with those is they put annuals, biennials, and some perennials in them. So the first year, they look great. Oh, you're a success. Okay. Second year, biennials come up. Oh, this is wonderful. Third year, the annuals are fading, the biennials are fading, the few perennials that are in those mixes, then better show up or you're going to be in a situation where you got, oh, Sweet Williams.
Okay.
Some will just have, you know, some daisies. It depends upon the mix. Okay, whereas a prairie mix, this is a big difference between these commercial, you know, meadow in a sack type mixes versus a prairie mix, which is composed of our native plants. A prairie mix is a nice balance between flowers and the prairie grasses, and the vast majority of those plants are long-lived perennials. So, and this is why the first year people despair with their prairie. I don't have any flowers. Why not? Because there's no annuals in it. Yeah. And these plants, once you plant a prairie, you should never have to replant it. So the second year, thank God for the biennial black-eyed Susan. Oh, thank God it was flowers. We're a success. And then about the third year, you start to see perennials like the purple cone flowers, yellow cone flowers, bergamot, etc. And many of your grasses will start to show up in the third year. And under optimal conditions, sometimes you see this in the second year of the perennials. But it usually takes 3 years. So if you really want a long-term solution, you're better off planting a native prairie mix as compared to one of these, you know, meadow in a box, meadow in a bag type things, because you're not going to get the long-term results. And also the grasses help to squeeze out the weeds. And if you don't have grasses, you're going to have weeds no matter what you do, because it's those thick, fibrous roots of the grasses that occupy the soil and prevent colonization by weeds. So that's really the trick, is to just, you know, work with nature. Nature knows what she's doing. She's done it for thousands of years. That's all we do is copy nature.
See, what I did 2 years ago is I ran over it with Arrest. It just kills the grasses and doesn't kill the broadleaf.
Uh-huh.
And that worked fantastic. It looked really nice until the Queensland lace came out, which got about 6 feet tall, so you couldn't see any of the flowers.
Yeah. That's a pretty aggressive plant. In fact, that is now registered. Queen Anne's lace is now registered as a noxious weed in many states.
Really?
Yes, it is.
How do you get rid of it?
Well, you can pull it.
Well, that's if you have a big of an area.
Or you can mow them when they're in full flower. Mow them down.
Okay.
Okay. They may resprout and flower again. Mow them again. They're biennials. So you have to break the cycle. You have to prevent them from producing viable seed. You're going to probably have to do that for 2 or 3 years in a row until you've depleted the soil of all the dormant seeds that have built up over the years.
Wow.
Okay. So never let it form seed. Okay. I know that sounds like a tall order, and it is. And I made a really terrible mistake at my house in my prairie. 1 year I had like one or two Queen Anne's lace plants in there. I said, oh, aren't they pretty? I'll just leave them. Oh, my God. How stupid can I get? I knew better. Next year I had all these little one-year-old Queen Anne's lace plants, and 2 years later I had 100 of those little suckers in there. And I've been pulling them ever since. I think I finally got them out. It's been 3 or 4 years. So I avoid that plant like the plague because it can be very aggressive.
All right. There you have.
I recommend just do the prairie instead of the one flower.
I would go native, man.
Okay.
Okay. You'll be much happier in the long run, and you won't have to replant it. That's really a big attraction for using a prairie mix.
Sounds great. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for calling. And Mike in Lone Rock, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've just moved into new construction in Lone Rock, and it was basically a few acres in a pine forest, so enough space was cleared for the house. And what we found was that the soil out there is just pure sugar as far as you can dig. And what I'd like to do is have some native grasses out there that, you know, I don't necessarily need to mow, and that would just kind of hold the space. Right now we do have some mulch that we've laid down just to keep the erosion down, and I want to know what I could plant out there that would work in a mostly shaded, sandy area.
Mostly shaded. Okay.
Yeah, it's mostly shaded. Again, it's thick pine forest, except for the area we cleared does get some sun throughout the day, but not consistently.
Okay, what kind of mulch did you put down?
Actually, what we used was the trees that the builder had, basically bowled over there to put the house in. We just had those chipped up.
Okay, how deep is that chips? How deep are the chips?
Well, we've only put it around the house where erosion was a problem. I would say just an inch or two deep.
Okay, and the rest of the area is just the bare sugar sand?
The rest of the area is bare sugar sand, although obviously we have had some pine needles fall, and there are some pretty good-sized weeds coming up. But
okay. You have one of the most difficult planting situations there is. Real dry, sandy soil in the shade. And your options, unfortunately, are limited. Now, as a friend of mine says, you can solve a lot of landscape problems with a chainsaw.
So, I have one of those.
My favorite tool. You can, if you want a prairie, obviously, you need to have at least a half a day of full sun. So anywhere where you have a minimum of a half a day of full sun, you can establish a prairie, especially on sandy soils. No problem. Okay? And even on your very, very dry sandy soils, we have a seed mix that will grow there. We have a prairie, low-growing prairie, and a short prairie for dry soils. And these are specifically designed to grow on really poor soil. Now, I can't guarantee that every single species in there is going to grow. But one thing you can do is, again, test your soil, see if it's really deficient in certain things, especially phosphorus, potassium, calcium, and magnesium. Nitrogen you get from the air, from the wind, from the rain. Nitrogen is usually not a problem for prairie plants, but the phosphorus, potassium, calcium, and magnesium can be limiting factors. If they are, you can very easily amend that soil and incorporate some fertilizer, some slow-release fertilizers into that soil prior to seeding, and then use the appropriate mix for your dry, sandy soil. Then mulch it. Okay, again, mulch is so important. Just an inch of straw over it to hold in moisture during the germination process. And if you can water it for the first 60 days,
all the better.
That makes a tremendous difference, especially on your dry, sandy soil. Another trick with sandy soils, plant them in the fall. It's a dormant seeding. The seeds will germinate in the spring when there's soil moisture available, and you won't have to water as much, if at all.
Neil Diebel, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, and we're talking prairies today, native prairie plants for our Wisconsin landscapes. Neil Diebel, prairie ecologist, landscape designer, and president of Prairie Nursery in Westfield, Wisconsin, our guest today. He comes by every so often to talk with us about prairies. I'm really pleased to have him back again today. And certainly you can join in with your questions. I know we have questions about spotted knapweed. We have a lawn, maybe a lomo grass question. We've got some prairie questions coming up. You may have a question as well, and I hope you do. Join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. And you can also email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. And we'll be back with Neil Diebel right after this look at the news. Glad to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with Neil Diebel, president of Prairie Nursery in Westfield, Wisconsin, our guest. Happy to have him along, and certainly he's ready to answer your questions about native prairie plants in our Wisconsin landscape. Join us at 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org. And Don in Casanova is up next, so let's go to Don. Hi, Don.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I've got a couple of acres that I want to convert to prairie, and there's a lot of wild asparagus in it. I wondered, can you dig that up and replant it, and is there a certain time of the year to do it? I'll take your question off the air.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not an asparagus expert, so I can kill it.
Killing it is probably a good thing, because there are, if you really want asparagus, there are some great asparagus types out there, varieties out there that will do a lot better for you than the wild asparagus. So just go to Jung's or one of the companies and take a look, because there are some that are really prolific, all male, and they'll do a lot better for you than the wild.
There you have it.
Having said that, how do you get rid of them?
Well, I have an asparagus bed.
Yeah. But,
and I know that it's a little bit hard to transplant once it's mature, yeah. Is it not, Larry?
Yes.
And yeah. I've tried to do that, not very successfully.
Yeah.
So maybe, like Larry says, just get rid of it and put in something else somewhere else that will give you better results.
Yeah. How do you get rid of it? He wants to know.
You know, I've never tried spraying it with Roundup. I assume that would work. You can dig it out because the roots are fairly deep, but once you get them out, I mean, like I say, I've killed it. So I think you could dig it out, but it's going to be a hard job because those roots go so deep, a couple feet,
yeah,
to get rid of them. I suppose like any other plant, you could smother it for a year. That probably would kill it, although I've never tried that, so I really don't know.
Should kill it.
But. I would think, but I have no experience in that area. I try to grow it instead of kill it, so I'm not really up on that. So sorry I can't really give you more information, but Larry knows 100 times more about that than I do.
Let's go to Paul in Antioch. Hi, Paul.
Good afternoon. My question is not necessarily about the prairie. It's mostly just a turf question, but Neil seems to be pretty knowledgeable in a lot of fields. We have a lawn that is a hodgepodge of grasses and with patches of zoysia in it. And we use a riding mulching mower, and the only water it gets is from rainwater. And so my question is, and it just looks kind of, not very nice.
Yeah, especially with zoysia grass in it, I would think.
Well, we do like the zoysia because it seems to keep the weeds out. But the question I have is sort of like a multiple choice. Do we mulch it? Do we thatch it? Do we aerate it? Or none of the above?
Not my area of expertise. Larry, help.
Yeah, it's, is this an old lawn?
Yeah, it's been about 20 years.
Well, you can check the amount of thatch that's growing in your, that's there in your lawn. Take a look at that. There's a way to, actually, there's a nice little publication, UW Extension publication on lawns and thatch, and you can look at that and determine the thatch layer, and if if it's a big thick layer, you can probably thatch it. But it does raise heck with the lawn itself. So I've never been a real big one to thatch, to be perfectly honest. But if you got a half an inch or 3/4 of an inch of thatch in there, then you're going to have to take it out. And I'd thatch. But you can go online and take a look at the extension, which will explain. The extension publication will explain what the thatch really looks like. It's not just that little grass clippings that fall down. It's more than that. It's below that. And that's where you're going to see the thatch layer. And if it's a half inch or 3/4 of an inch, you probably want to thatch it. But that's the best we can do for you today. I take a look at that extension publication, go to the Learning Store, and take a look at that, and that'll give you some better advice probably than I'm giving you right now. Thanks for calling, though, Paul. Keith and Rachel, we go to you. Hi, Keith.
Hey, first of all, before I get to my question, I grew up down in St. Louis, and zoysia responds very well to burning. Especially, you wait till it's all brown, and you burn it in the spring, and the little rise almost pop right back up. It loves it.
Now, Keith, we'd like to know how you discovered that. Was that on your neighbor's lawn?
zoysia is real popular down in the St. Louis area, which is where I grew up, and it just the little old ladies would go out there and they'd burn their little patch, and it looked great.
Yeah.
And you got to leave it real long too. It's got to be like 4 inches long.
Yeah.
So it's like walking on almost on a carpet.
It doesn't really do very well in Wisconsin with our condition. It pretty much runs brown. It stays brown pretty much all summer. It's great in the spring, and then it's brown all summer.
It's pretty hot-blooded, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's like a Bermuda. So my real question is about the invasion of the spotted knapweed up here. We're under assault.
Yeah. Yeah,
what's that about, and where did it come from, and why is it all of a sudden appearing everywhere?
Well, it's another one of your Eurasian killer weeds brought over by agricultural products, hay or whatever, straw that was brought over from Europe and Asia, and it loves dry sandy soil like you have in central Wisconsin.
Oh boy!
And it's really really nasty, and it is believed. I don't know if anybody actually has research on this, but it is believed to be allelopathic, where it exudes toxins that discourage the growth of other plants into the soil.
Wow.
Certainly its behavior is indicative of that. It's related to some other plants that have those capacities. So it's not only aggressive if it's using chemical warfare, too. That makes it even more potent a competitor. It generally acts as a biennial, short-lived perennial. It's hard to pull out because you can't always get all the root because the roots break off, and I'm sure you've tried to do that.
Oh, yeah. It burns your hands, too. It's got some kind of toxin on it.
Yeah, you want to be really careful with that stuff. So, fortunately, we don't have a lot of that in our area, but it's starting to come in farther south from you guys. You have it worse than we do. But, go ahead.
Does mowing help? I mean, if you keep it short, does it die off or does it spread out?
No, if you mow it, it just reblooms right at the ground level. And it will literally have flowers 1 or 2 inches above the ground. So mowing is really not an effective strategy against it. If you have a small area, you can go and pull it out or dig it out. If it's a larger area, you got a really tough job ahead of you. And burning doesn't seem to affect it negatively either. So it's a brutal weed. You know, most weeds we can control one way or another pretty readily. But there's a couple really tough ones out there, and spotted knapweed is one of them. It's like sweet clover in your prairie. Sweet clover is another non-native legume that is stimulated to germinate by fire. So when we burn prairies, if there's sweet clover history in there, you get this big flush of a really bad weed that was caused by burning, which is normally our magic bullet in prairies.
Yeah.
This is one species that actually benefits from it. So if it's a small area, you can go out and dig it out, and don't ever let it go to seed.
If it's flowering, is it at seed or
no? No, if it's flowering, it has not yet formed seed, and that is the absolute best time to identify it and to get it out of there.
Okay.
Is it a large area you're working with or a small area?
Yeah, well, I got, my pasture here is 15, 20 acres, and, I see it on the it's coming, marching down the, the sides of the road.
Yeah,
I thought it was only going where the land was disturbed. It loved that area, but I just mowed about a half an acre of it the other night. I just got fed up and just fired up the brush hog.
Yeah, and it'll invade into any sandy soil pretty much that has any open area in it whatsoever. And the mowers, they always make sure to mow it right when the seed is ripe so they can distribute all the way along the roadside across the county.
Yeah.
They've done a good job up here in Portage County.
Yeah, and farther south you have the wild parsnip on the more loamy soils, and the mowers have spread that just throughout everywhere. It's a plague. So, I mean, if you have just grass, and I'm not telling you should, I'm not a big herbicide man, but if you're desperate and you just have a grass in your field and you want to get rid of the spotted knapweed, you can use specific broadleaf herbicides that will kill the spotted knapweed as well as any other broadleaf plant, leaving only the grasses intact. So,
does Roundup kill it?
Yes, repeated sprays with Roundup will kill it, but that will kill everything.
Well, yeah, I know that. So, I hit it with Roundup, and it didn't seem, because there's not much leaf matter on it to even suck up the Roundup. It's like big sticks.
When did you spray it? Earlier in the year?
Early in the spring,
okay.
Yeah.
It probably was not at the stage where it's susceptible. Every plant has its own time of susceptibility. The general rule of thumb, not always, the general rule of thumb is when you're trying to kill a plant with Roundup is to spray it when it's in flower or just after flower.
Okay.
Right. That's the point at which it's translocating more down into the roots. When the plant is coming up in the spring, it's translocating energy up from the roots and not taking it down into the roots where it can kill it. Always read the label. Make sure that, number one, that it will kill it, and number two, if they have specific information about what time or what stage to apply it, that's very important.
All right. Good luck.
All right. Thanks for your help.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. An email from Melinda in Madison who says, I have a space that started out with the prairie seed mix from your nursery, Neil, about 6-7 years ago. It now has mostly Canada goldenrod, most likely because I had a small patch I didn't eliminate and it took over. Any suggestions for getting rid of it? There's also stinging needle, burdock, black raspberries. Should I get rid of these?
Wow. She's got the rogues gallery there.
Yeah.
And this comes back to number one step in any time you're going to plant a prairie, whether it's a garden or a seed mix on a larger area, take no prisoners. Get rid of all the bad guys, because if you leave a few behind, they can spread rapidly depending on who they are. And Canada goldenrod is actually one of our absolute worst weeds in our prairies. And it's a native plant, which just goes to show just because a plant is native doesn't mean it's good.
Yeah.
Like, poison ivy, ragweed, these are all native, but not the thing you want to plant in your yard probably. So this is an aggressive perennial plant, the Canada goldenrod, that not only spreads readily by seed, but it creeps by underground rhizomes, and it colonizes large areas. And on its report card, it says very clearly, does not play well with others. Mm-hmm. So you have the situation where it's creeping by rhizomes, consolidating, forming big patches, and then spreading by seed. How do you get rid of it? There are a couple different ways. If it's a small area, this is what I do at my house, so I don't use any chemicals in my prairie. I try not to, very seldom. After a rain, I will go out and take a little, either a dandelion digger or narrow trowel, and find where the root is and just dig under that root and extract as much of that rhizome root as I can. It usually runs along the soil only a couple inches deep. Okay, yeah. You want to make sure you don't disturb other adjacent beneficial plants. And this works best when the soil is damp because it's easier to get the root out. If it's dry, don't waste your time because it's just going to break off. Okay?
Okay.
That's not going to get them all. You're going to have to go back a number of times. Okay, the other choice is you can go in with the glove of death,
yeah,
where you put herbicide, heavy rubber gloves on both hands, and then take a highly absorbent cotton glove on one hand, put some Roundup or whatever herbicide you want to use. I stick to Roundup because it's supposedly less toxic than the others. And you spray that, put it in a little, like one of those plant spray bottles, label it with a skull and crossbones, say Roundup only, and spray that into your glove. Put it on stream, not mist, because if there's mist that gets into the air, it can travel to other plants and land on their leaves and hurt them. So you just put it right in the hand where the rubber, where the cotton glove is, and then you stroke the plant up the stem so that that herbicide from the glove gets all over the leaves on the stem of the goldenrod. That will translocate down in the roots and kill most of it. But again, because of the extensive root system, you're seldom going to get them all with one treatment. They're going to come back probably next year, and you'll have to go out and do it again.
All right. Let's go to Malcolm in Rhinelander. Hi, Malcolm.
Yeah, hi, Neil and Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a beautiful patch of trout lily in our property down in Prairie View, Illinois, and it's been invaded by garlic mustard.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, what's the best way to attack garlic mustard?
Well, you have a couple choices here. Garlic mustard is a non-native biennial that was brought here as a pot herb because it has garlic-type flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it escaped and has run rampant. And the seeds of garlic mustard, according to the studies done at various places, show that it is able to stay viable in the soil for up to 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how do you stop garlic mustard? There's two organic methods you can use. One is what I do at my house. When it's just blooming, I go out and yank them out of the ground. Okay, when they're in bloom, then they will not form seed. However, if they have gone beyond bloom and started to form seed, you need to get the plants out of there because they can after ripen even after you pull them. Okay. Another little trick is if you're just pulling, even when they're in bloom or starting to get beyond bloom to the seed formation stage, I pull all the flowers off.
Mm-hmm.
So now they don't have any energy from the root, from the stem, and from the leaves to form seed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you do that repeatedly after, 8 years, you'll be rid of it. I've been doing it for a long time in mine. And every year I get less and less. Okay.
Yeah.
And I have this little woodland area and it was full of garlic mustard and I've added trilliums and jack in the pulpits and all these cool plants. But it was completely overrun with garlic mustard. So by pulling it when it's in flower, before it makes seed, you can reduce it. The other method is, and this is not quite as effective, but if you have a large area, take a weed whip out there, and when it's in bloom, go and whack it down to the ground knock the blooms off. Oftentimes they'll rebloom, and you have to go whack it again.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be careful that you don't whack the good guys.
Right.
Okay? So yeah. If you have a larger area, and pulling is just not feasible, you can make a lot more headway by going in and just whacking it. Now, with the trout lily.
Yeah.
The trout lily is... And I would have to do a little research on this, but that is in the lily family. It is a monocot. Okay, for those of you who are fans of herbicides, and I'm not a big herbicide guy, but the garlic mustard is a broadleaf. It is susceptible to broadleaf herbicides like the ones you spray on your lawn. Okay. The monocots generally are not, although I cannot speak for sure about the trout lily. Okay. You could do a little test and see. Now that assumes that you want to use any, nasty mm-hmm. broadleaf herbicides on your property, which I don't, I'm not big into that, but some mm-hmm. people have no problem with that.
Right.
So that's the third thing you could test. But again, test it before you go full scale. Just test a few trout lilies and see if they're hurt by it. If not, if that's a method you want to use, then that's an option.
All right.
Would that be Roundup?
No, Roundup is a broad spectrum herbicide. It kills just about everything.
Okay.
Some of your Weed Be Gone. 2,4-D. 2,4-D is commonly used. I hate the stuff. It stinks. It's got to be bad for you. Okay.
Okay.
But it's in all these lawn care formations, formulations. So, and it is an effective tool in certain situations. And there's another herbicide called Garlon, which is supposedly more user friendly, environmentally friendly, because it supposedly breaks down more readily.
All right. Okay. There you have it. Good luck.
And if I could, what about teasel?
What about
teasel? How do you
teasel?
Get rid of that?
Well, that's that's another non-native, typically biennial. It's like the Queen Anne's lace. Do not allow it to go to seed. If you can break that cycle of reseeding, you don't necessarily have to kill all the plants or dig them all up or anything. Just prevent them from going to seed. And after a few years, you should theoretically be able to consume all the seeds as they germinate, the seed bank should be exhausted over a period of years.
All right. There you have it. Thank you very much for calling, Malcolm. Appreciate it. Bill in Green Bay. On to you. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Well, as I speak, I'm looking over the Keith White Prairies at UW Green Bay.
Oh, cool.
Thought you'd like you'd appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Well, actually, I'm calling because last spring we ordered the transplants from Prairie Nursery for the bird garden, the hummingbird garden, the rain garden, the butterfly garden. And they look great after one growing season, and I thought that the listeners in the De Pere area, if they wanted to see what they looked like after just one year, they're on display at the De Pere greenhouse.
Perfect.
Fantastic.
I also had a suggestion for those people that might be considering the use of Roundup. You can get a generic version of Roundup at most farmer supplies.
Mm-hmm.
And if you add you know, like a teaspoon of dish soap to that mixture, it works really well. It's much less expensive as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I say Roundup, that's the trade name, but there are a lot of knockoffs because their patent expired a few years ago. So what you're looking for is, as you point out, a glyphosate herbicide. There's a lot of different ones that are like half price. Another little trick to you can use half the amount of Roundup if you want to by adding. Another ingredient is basically a fertilizer that someone somehow discovered that if you mix it in with the Roundup, it's more effective.
Hmm.
And that's ammonium. Okay, yeah, right.
ammonium.
Why can't I
phosphate,
think of it now?
Ammonium.
Oh, my gosh. Why can't I think of it now? Oh, my God. I'm having a...
senior moment.
I'm having a senior moment. It's a little early for my senior moment, Larry. It'll come to me. But it allows you to use half the rate, okay? Whereas normally your typical rate of Roundup is a half a cup of 40% concentrate per gallon, okay? You can knock that down to a quarter cup if you add this unknown ingredient. And I'm so sorry I can't think of it right now. But I will think of it. We have 5 minutes to think of it, so we'll come up with it.
All right. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it. And Mike and Seneca, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Well, good morning. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I've got a quick comment on something we did here. There's a couple callers back had a quandary about taking weeds off to plant the prairie.
Yeah.
Well, what I did, I've got fields here, and I'm not going to plant prairie in there, but what we did is we took a hay conditioner and cut it, windrowed it, and rolled it up in round bales, and then sell them to farmers for bedding, or providing there's some usable grasses. They don't want total weeds unless you sell them to a buffalo ranch. I guess the buffalo eat that stuff. But my question to you is, I had a lot of tall weeds like purple loosestrife. I had goldenrod and some of these really tall weeds. Now they send out rhizomes, and I was wondering, since I cut this and there's just stubble out there now, maybe 3 inches tall, will that eventually die out, or will they keep growing? That was one question I had.
Okay, you say you have purple loosestrife. Are you sure that's the species that normally grows in marshes?
Yep. I'm near a DNR area, and there's hundreds of acres of this stuff, and they're working on it. But it's gotten up to my egg fields here.
Really? My gosh. Okay. What kind of grasses do you have in there?
It can be airborne.
Yeah. What are your grasses that you're cutting?
Well, these, I've had bird's foot tree foil. I had alfalfa, red clover, a nutsedge, and some other grasses in there mixed in with the weeds. But I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about these tall weeds that, like goldenrod and some of those, I can't think of the other names. There's about three or four in those fields.
Uh-huh. Well, the goldenrod, if it's the Canada goldenrod or some of its cousins that creep by rhizomes, you're not going to get rid of that by cutting. That's going to come roaring right back. It's a very difficult weed, as we just discussed earlier. Very difficult to control because it's perennial, and it spreads by both rhizomes and by seeds. The Purple loosestrife, of course, is an invasive non-native plant, typical of moist areas.
Right.
And I've never mowed that one, just trying to control it, because normally it's in the marsh, so I don't have any information on that. So, and by the way, that addition for putting in your tank mix with the Roundup is called AMS, ammonium sulfate.
Oh, ammonium sulfate.
Ammonium sulfate. And what it does is it conditions the water so that the herbicide is more effective, which allows you to use half as much as you normally would. So instead of a cup per gallon of water, you only need a quarter cup. And you put in about, I use 3/4 of a cup per 4-gallon sprayer, so that's 3/16 of a cup per gallon of water. And it allows you to not only save money, but you use way less herbicide in the environment.
And on that note, we have to close. Neil, your website again, where's your website?
Oh, www.prairienursery.com. And if you want to talk to a human being, you can call us at 1-800-476-9453.
1-800-476-9453. Neil, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry. My pleasure to be here with you.
Neil Deball is prairie ecologist and landscape designer and president of Prairie Nursery of Westfield, Wisconsin. Great to have him back. And we will have him back again, of course, and we'll talk some more with him about prairies. Just to take a look ahead, at 11 on Monday, Dr. Mark Sager of the Alzheimer's Institute has an update for us. And then at 11:45, we'll hear from some patent attorneys about protecting your inventions. Stay with us. Lots in store.